And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this beautiful Saturday morning. It's very, very good to be here. I don't mind telling everyone listening that my goal today is to see if I can draw in about four listeners that are eager and hungry to improve their health. So here goes. I came across this article that was very intriguing to me, and it's going to be so simple that either you're going to say, wow, or you're going to say, why doesn't my doctor do this? Anyway, here's the title of the article. It comes from the journal Electronic Physician, April 25th, 2017. And the title is, Garlic Abolishes Risk for Intravenous Catheter Infection in the Intensive Care Unit. Yeah, that may be a little bit wordy, but it sums up everything. So here's what they did. Well, here's what the article says. Hospital-acquired infections are common. You know what that means, folks? That means you do not go into the hospital with the infection, but you sure come out with it, and guess who pays for that? That would be you, not the hospital. So if you go into a hospital and you pick up a staph infection or an E. coli infection or Pseudomonas aeruginosa, or Klebsiella pneumoniae, or Enterococcus faecalis, or Enterobacter, you're stuck. So here it is right here. And I know this is a radical idea. It's probably going to make steam come out of some people's heads, but don't make me know, never mind. Researchers gave a 400 milligram garlic pill, now that's radical, folks, to 47 patients. And then they went on to give a placebo, which is not a garlic pill. A placebo is basically nothing, to 47 patients admitted to the ICU. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but if you're admitted to the ICU, you're not in the best of shape, or you're not in the best condition. There could be improvements. Okay. Venous catheters were cultured to determine infection at the venous entry site, and urine samples were taken. Here are the results of the study. Okay. All right, let's talk about the placebo first. If you were admitted to ICU and they put a venous catheter in your arm, that just means sticking a needle in your vein, they had 47 test subjects. Okay, how many people developed infections that were on the placebo? The number is 5. Okay. How many people had infected urine cultures with the placebo? Well, 12.3%. But if you're those 12 people out of 100 that get a wicked infection, I guess that's not a pretty good number, is it? Now we'll talk about the garlic one. I don't know who came up with the story, but, you know, you're radical, whoever did this. The people that were given one 400 milligram garlic pill when they entered the ICU, how many infections did they have at the venous catheter where they stuck you with a needle? Oh, that's right. The number's 0. Wow. You think that's just a coincidence? No. Garlic is spectacular. Now, it did go on to say that those on the garlic, they said infected urine culture was, there were 2 out of 47. So, but those numbers are pretty phenomenal if you ask me. All right. The game is, you have to guess which general is responsible for this quote. Some of you are probably going to get it, but there's going to be a lot of you that won't get it, because this general, he's either loved or he's hated, but I'm telling you, the dude is a warrior, or was a warrior. Here's what he says, and I can tell you, well, I'll let you figure out the context. The general quotes or says, you've got to drive the body to the last inch of energy and then go on. You gain nothing by just going up to where you are exhausted. The body will only build and grow to fit the demands which the mind makes. If all you do is exercise until the body is tired, the body will get lazy and stop a bit shorter every time. You have to go to the point of exhaustion and go on. That way, the body will figure out We've got to build up more strength if that crazy mind is going to drive us this hard. If you always quit when you are merely tired, you will not gain. Once you let the body tell the mind when to quit, you are whipped for sure. You cannot gain listening to the body. We can become stronger. We only use about half the available strength of our bodies and less than half of that of our minds. We can always take one more step. When we are on the attack, we can always go one more mile. That's from General George S. Patton, Jr. I shudder to think what would happen to our nation if we didn't have a warrior like General Patton protecting us from evil. But that's my opinion. All right. Point number three this morning. And this is not me telling you what to do or how to do it, but I find this very interesting. And just listen to the date that I give you. Because the year this act was imposed was 1937. So that's the date, but just listen to the context. All right. It's all relative, folks. The United States government passed the first law in the world to outlaw the free use of cannabis. It was called the United States Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. Now, the American Medical Association, or if you want to call them the AMA, they completely opposed the passage of the act because it would place onerous demands on physicians. Number one, requiring them to pay a tax for prescribing cannabis. Let me think now. If a doctor has to pay a tax every time he prescribes cannabis, how's that going to work out? Well, I can tell you what, it's going to get old really quick, right? Oh, that's right, that's by design. Number two, it required physicians, medical doctors, to utilize special order forms in order to get it. Okay, you think that might be a hurdle? Of course. Number three, they had to keep detailed records of its use. Number three, it sounds to me like they're trying to make it really, really hard for doctors to maybe prescribe cannabis oil. Okay. The AMA knew cannabis had value for the treatment of a large number of conditions, and they held that objective evidence proving cannabis was harmful was insufficient. And they expressed concern that the act would obstruct subsequent research into its medicinal value. Really? So we're only 80 years removed from this. Has that worked? You betcha it has. I would venture a guess that... Now, this is my opinion, so you can take it and toss it however you want. But they're not going to... Folks, they're not going to do head-to-head cancer outcome studies based on the use of modern chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and they're not going to compare that with the use of cannabis. You know, remove the hallucinogenic THC from it. I know they're not going to do that because they don't want to know, that's not going to be a good narrative for them. Anyway, all right, let me see if I can find this next one right here on my phone. Okay. I tell you what, sometimes it just really gets me, okay. I got this article from Bill Sardi, and it was posted September the 4th, 2017 by Bill Sardi. And the title of his post is, A $475,000 and a $5 cancer cure are both announced in the same week. You know what, I know that... Anyway, we won't cover that topic. Anyway, let me read this to you. In striking contrast, a university-based team just announced it has developed a $5 treatment that completely abolishes cancer. In the same week, news headlines hailed the Food and Drug Administration's approval of a $475,000 immunotherapy treatment for a blood cancer called leukemia. And Bill Sardi goes on to say, I'm sure readers want to hear about the $5 cancer cure first. Well, I agree with him. A university-based team set out to develop a cancer cure that could be performed in third world countries where incomes are low. Equipment is unavailable, and even electricity is non-existent. What they came up with needs just a needle and a syringe and a steady hand. Okay? It's called tumor ablation. And the process is the injection of ethanol, which is alcohol, directly into a solid tumor. It causes the tumor cells to dehydrate and die. How's that for a brilliant technique? It has been successfully demonstrated in pancreatic cancers, parathyroid cancer, liver cancer, adrenal cancer, and other tumors. It requires no special equipment, and it was 100% effective at curing cancers in hamsters in the animal lab. Now, I don't know if you know this, folks, but you know what the effective rate for chemotherapy is? It's about 2.5% successful. That means we might have a 97% failure rate. I know that's not fun to talk about, but the facts are the facts. Its only drawback is escape of ethanol into surrounding healthy tissues, and this has been overcome by making an ethyl cellulose substance that is highly viscous and remains in place rather than spreading to healthy tissues. So here's how they do it. Only a 3% ethyl cellulose concentration injected at the certain rate was determined to produce optimal effect. That's all it took, just 3% ethyl cellulose. The results were astounding. Using conventional ethanol ablation, 4 of 12 tumors regressed completely by the 7th day following treatment. Folks, you can't tell me that chemotherapy is going to completely regress tumors within 7 days. That ain't going to happen. No, the treatments are going to be $475,000, not $5. The formed gel of ethanol cellulose reduced tumor volume to 13% versus 89% of their initial size with standard ethanol installation. 8 days followed injection of 7 out of 7 tumors that had completely regressed with ethanol cellulose gel, whereas 0 of 5 completely regressed with standard ethanol. And that's just a fancy, what they're doing is they're saying they found out that ethanol cellulose gel at 3% ethanol solution worked better than ethanol did. That's all they're saying. Okay. Ethyl cellulose is currently approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as a food additive, and it costs less than 50 cents a gram. That means injection of 16 times less than medicine, ethanol cellulose versus plain ethanol, completely abolished cancer. What does the word completely mean? What does the word abolished mean? So when it says completely abolished cancer, well, you know what that means. Ask your oncologist about this treatment for your cancer. See what they say. And if you have the research in hand, I'm really curious. I'd like to be a fly on the wall. Curious readers can view the astounding visual images of these complete cures published in a recent edition of Scientific Reports. Look it up. There you go. Type in Scientific Reports and look up the use of ethyl cellulose to completely abolish cancers. You can look it up yourself. It's Scientific Reports. A commentator at the American Council on Science and Health website says, and I quote, "Any technological advances that result from the team's research will be applicable not only in the development world, but also to the developed one as well." He's just saying this is not just for third world countries that can't afford $500,000 for chemo. Will we Will we ever see the day when this treatment is applied in mass? He asked. Of course, major news sources buried the $5 cancer cure, and what they did was they chose to lead with the $500,000 one. Didn't even cover the $5 cure. Meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration has approved the first immunotherapy drug for childhood leukemia. The treatment involves the drug Kymriah, that's spelled K-Y-M-R-A-H. I may be saying it wrong. And it will be confined to cases of unremitting acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Kymriah, also called the first living drug, that's just the name they chose for it. By the way, the drug companies can call it whatever they want. They can say it's the Garden of Eden of drug if they want. They can call it the Fountain of Youth drug. They can call it Vitality 101. I just made those up, but they can call it whatever they want. And Kymriah is called the first living drug, genetically alters immune cells, you know, your T cells, you know, T stands for thymus, to fight the disease. About 600 patients develop this form of leukemia annually. 600. Well, I can tell you right now, I'm really sympathetic toward those 600 people. I hate it that they have a hard, difficult form of leukemia. I don't like that at all. But that's 600, so, but that's also about $500,000 per treatment. It can also be used for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma, which is a bone cancer. What it does is it mobilizes the body's own immune system. So we don't want to go back to the previous article that I read when they gave people entering intensive care garlic. Now, we wouldn't want to do anything like that to mobilize the body's own immune system, would we? I've already explained how to mimic this T-cell therapy at a pittance of the cost of Kymriah. I'm going to avoid that one right there. Anyway, there's just a lot of other stuff about that. If you want to join me on the radio, please feel free to give me a call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Turn your radio down.
There you go. Good morning. All right, How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
Well, you know who this is, don't you?
Not really, but I can tell you this. You sound extremely brilliant and intelligent.
Well, of course, because you've taught me so much just this morning.
Really? Name one thing that you're considering now that I brought that up. Are you thinking about garlic after I brought up that garlic study?
That will work, but I also want to know, because I have somebody up in the Northland that has metastatic prostate cancer. I'm guessing stage 4.
Well, that's what metastatic. Yeah, you're right.
Has done a nephrostomy. Has a nephrostomy bag.
Oh, bless his heart.
And I've been reading about stem cell therapy and vitamin C therapy.
Yes.
What about powdered vitamin C and mega doses?
That's perfectly fine by me.
Will that cause improvement?
Well, can I cover just one small point and then we'll go on to that, please?
Please.
All right.
At the end of my rope.
Well, it will. Maybe your buddy's kind of at the end of he's just not given a lot of options other than these medical treatments, right?
They opted not to do the last chemo, which I'm glad, because I'm afraid that it would have killed him.
And you know what? I just hate that, but I can't disagree, because I see that just about every single day. Let me cover a topic here.
Sure.
You know that if a Guernsey cow gives birth to a beautiful baby calf, and it's a little boy calf.
Uh-huh.
And so, by its very nature, as soon as the calf's born, the mama eats the placenta, which is what cows do, and that's brilliant. That's God's design. But the baby begins to nurse almost immediately, you know, right there at where the milk supply comes from.
Yeah.
And if everything goes well, that cow's going to double its, or the calf is going to double his weight in 90 days. So it can go from 45 pounds to 90 pounds, no problem. Of course, I know right. there's probably a cattleman listening saying, I don't have these numbers right, and they're right. But they're going to double their weight because milk contains very high concentrations of a substance called IGF-1, or insulin growth factor 1. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because there are plenty of studies to show that the higher that insulin growth factor 1 is, this triggers a response of a tumor to grow at a fast exponential rate, and it causes metastasis. Or another way of saying this is, when you have a cancer and you also have higher levels of insulin growth factor 1, you're just begging for the cancer to metastasize.
Right.
And so when you look at cancer studies, when they find higher levels of insulin growth factor 1 in somebody with cancer, they know it is a predictor of metastasis. And so I always try to completely get rid of insulin growth factor 1.
Okay.
So a baby calf is supposed to have some for a short period of their life so they can grow very quickly, but I don't know that a human being with prostate cancer or any form of cancer needs any insulin growth factor 1. That means you avoid milk and dairy products like the plague.
Okay.
No cheese, no butter, no milk, no ice
cream.
No yogurt. No yogurt, that's correct. Now, that's just my opinion, but that doesn't answer everything.
Right.
I've had a ton of people to, quote, experiment with because they're willing.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that move away from a high sugar diet, they always do the very best. And so one way of saying this is, cancer cells, by their very nature, they're hardwired to suck down sugar and carbohydrates like there's no tomorrow.
Right.
So if you're feeding them lots of carbohydrates, I don't know that we can use a strategy of killing it with chemotherapy and feeding it massive doses of sugar at the same time. Thus, we enter with the concept of maybe a higher fat diet with just a little bit of protein and very, very low carbohydrates. I don't completely take away carbohydrates, but if your friend wants to eat spinach and turnip greens and asparagus and broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and kale, you have at it. Cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're doing is you're trying to make sure that about 70, maybe 80% of all the calories that you take into the body, they come from fat. Because what will happen is, if you provide fat to the body, all the normal cells can quickly switch over from burning sugar into burning fat for fuel. They will not suffer. But
uh-huh.
cancer cells, you completely, and I hate to say it this way, but you completely screw up their ability to live and to breathe when you give the body fat. And I like that. It's fine by me if we starve cancer cells to death. I kind of like that strategy.
Yeah, me too.
And so you can accomplish that with a ketogenic diet. At the same time,
correct.
I would really be for avoiding any dairy products for a short season to see if it yields a benefit. Now, let me back up. That article that I just read from Bill Sardi was just talking about two different cancer treatments or two different cures. One, they would inject an ethyl cellulose gel into a tumor, and it causes in 7 days a 100% abolishment of the tumor. Now, you can't tell me that there's any chemotherapy or radiation or treatments that can even get close to that, but the treatment itself, they estimate it costs about $5. $5.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll let you do the math on the chemotherapy, but to make a long story short, what if we could do something to help the body? Because what medicine was doing in this article I read is they came up with an immunotherapy drug for $500,000. And what they want is they want to use that to bolster or stimulate the immune system to work properly. Now, I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm going to cover it one more time in case there's a person that needs this information. The thymus gland is absolutely the largest gland in the immune system.
Uh-huh.
And it plays the most powerful role in telling the body how to fight cancer cells and infection. I could tell you story after story after story that's just incredible and you probably wouldn't believe, but if you do not try to help the thymus gland, do its job and start working better. You got to bring the first step in cancer treatment, in my mind, is you got to bring the thymus gland back from the dead so it can start to work properly. And so that's where maybe the role of vitamin C, like you said, because the last time I checked, your thymus gland or your buddy's thymus gland, they require vitamin C for optimal thymus function. So I think that you're brilliant in that you're thinking about higher doses of vitamin C. I love it. And plus,
would powdered be better than, say, a capsule?
Well, I can tell you if you use the powdered vitamin C, some of that's going to create oxidation, which in turn kills the cancer cells, which is fine by me. I'm also a fan of supplementing with what's called natural vitamin C. That means it comes from a fruit or vegetable or berry source. So that's easy to do. All these things are easy and they're doable.
Yeah.
So you starve with cancer.
He's got a lot of allergies, that food allergies right now.
Well, you know, I've already asked three people this week, so tell me again, what happened with your allergies once you gave up sugar? And they said, well, after 3 days, they kind of disappeared. And I'm going, oh, really?
Awesome.
Isn't that an interesting observation? But, you know, I'm kind of joking about this stuff on some level. Because.
But I also know how serious you are.
Oh, I'm totally serious. I'm totally devoted to helping your friend. But
I know.
The joke is, you've got to get the person to connect the dots. Oh,
right,
you mean
exactly.
All my horrible allergies were gone once I gave up sugar? Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. And so the thymus gland, he needs thymus extract right now.
Thymus extract.
Yes, and he probably needs both zinc and vitamin C. Now, I know this is controversial because if they have sold him on the idea, of course, their idea is the most high-profit business in the universe currently that's legal. I mean, there's nothing that reaps more money to an oncologist than prescribing chemotherapy. You know what? I've already had... I was going to say something negative. Did you see how I pulled the reins back?
I am so proud of you. Don't know.
Can I ask you a favor today in your free time? Would you go by Tractor Supply and look for an extra-large double bit to put in my mouth, and that way every time I start to say something is negative, we'll pull back and I'll go, oh, that hurts.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Man, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, I was just going to relay a story about an oncologist chewing me out on the phone one time because I messed up her PET scan. But anyway, we don't have to cover that topic. So your friend, what we want to do is we want to see if there's enough strength left in the body for it to rise to the occasion to heal. So I would say thymus extract, zinc.
Uh-huh.
Zinc is essential. And, you know, there's a million other things that can be done. But the only thing that your friend's got to have to make this work is he's got to have a belief that he's heading in the right direction. Because if a person doesn't believe something's going to work, then why would they even try it, right?
Exactly. How much thymus extract and zinc and vitamin C?
Much as we can get into him.
I mean, thousands of milligrams, hundreds of milligrams?
Yes, thousands of milligrams of vitamin C.
Okay. I mean, I've got another
thymus
friend
extract,
who takes 5,000 a day. So.
Yeah, that's... Do you hear me arguing with that strategy?
Not at all.
No.
I'm wanting to know, I guess, if there's a top-end number for somebody who is as sick.
Well, let's put it this way. Okay, it's all relative, right? If he goes for chemotherapy and they say, sir, all your hair is going to fall out in about 2 weeks and you're going to be as sick as a dog and you won't be believed because you're going to have vomiting and diarrhea. Well, they don't seem to have a problem with dosing somebody up with mega doses of toxic drugs that just about kill them anyway.
Right.
So if I give him vitamin C, which the human body needs anyway, I think there's just about zero risk of a problem other than some loose stools or diarrhea.
Got it.
And so I don't have a problem with that, but this is his decision he makes. I can't medically tell him what to do or which treatment.
I understand wholeheartedly, but you know why I come to you.
Because you're brilliant?
Exactly.
I knew it. Now,
don't you ever think different.
Just for the sake of our listeners, wasn't your IQ tested at 1.2 million points at one time?
Exactly.
I know you were a few years younger than currently, but that's like the world record.
Yeah, and you are just as brilliant for remembering that.
Well, that's about the only thing I remembered from our last conversation.
Well, we'll get to have another one in October, and I'll bring
yes,
it up today.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And you know what my diabolical plot is for you?
What's that?
I've continually trying to trick you into getting stronger and healthier and becoming even more radiant and intelligent. So.
And by the way, that's 26 pounds gone.
Oh, you mean 26 pounds has disappeared from your life?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to give you all the credit for that, buddy. Way to go.
I think we'll give it to God and the keto diet.
Well, you had to come to the point where you said, you know what? There is a potential that I could get worse unless something changes.
Yeah, well, you made that abundantly clear.
I know, but my goal is never to terrify or scare somebody. But I can tell you this. If you look at all the studies that have been done, unless someone's moved to do something, they don't do anything. And sometimes being slightly afraid that things aren't going to go well, that could actually be a very positive experience.
It can. Well, between you and God, the keto diet, and our mutual friend, we're going to make it.
All right. Wait, good call. Way to go, buddy. I wish the best for your friend. Is this a relative or a friend?
It's somebody who might as well be a relative. We've known each other that long.
Well, you love him like a brother then, don't you?
Exactly. There's nothing I wouldn't do.
I think I read a scripture that said there is a friend that is closer than a brother.
That's right.
From
That's
a very, right. very important textbook, I think.
Yes.
Very important.
One other quick question. We've covered the stuff that we can do. What about stem cell? What about stem cells?
Well, and don't let me speak out of context here because there's lots of application for stem cells, but in his bone marrow, he has literally billions and billions of stem cells, or he's supposed to.
Yeah.
And these stem cells are what manufacture all the immune factors and the white blood cells and things like that. So I'm almost positive their angle on this is to try to enhance how his body can start making more of the immune cells that it needs to kind of fight the fight. Does that make sense?
Got it. Okay, I understand.
Okay.
I will be on the phone today working this through. Thank you so
All right.
much
thank
for
you.
Your
yes,
help.
You're
Greatly
welcome.
Appreciate you.
Okay,
Have
thank
a great
you,
day.
Sir. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, there's a phone line open. I hope I didn't go too long on that. 903-586-5257 if you want to call and ask me a question or make a comment. Now, if you're going to call and ask me about what your favorite, you know, flavor of chemotherapy is, I'm not going to be able to answer a question like that. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Morgan.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm good. I was wondering, if I were to get a lab test, is there a good place to go for a cash price?
There used to be one right there on Broadway, but I think it's there no more. But I don't know the answer to your question. Where are you calling from?
Flint.
Flint. I don't know the answer to that. I know that, for example, there's a diagnostic imaging place called Tyler Open MRI, and you could probably go in there, and for a cash price, you could get an MRI almost of any – I mean, there's exceptions to the rule, but – for just, you know, a few hundred bucks, whereas if you went to the hospital, it might be $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the answer to your question, but I can look into it and find out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye. But see, by the way, ma'am, I think that your idea is pure brilliance. And that's where I wish healthcare would go to where you could go and get these low-cost lab tests where you could evaluate yourself. You know what? The truth is this. I ask every person that walks in my door that brings a copy of their lab test, did your doctor go over these lab findings with you? And I would say 99.9 out of 100 times they said no. And as a matter of fact, the doctor makes a comment, everything looks good, even though you've got 10 things that are out of whack and are bad. And so that's just a madness right there. But I love the idea of having a lab center where you can go and get whatever you want to have done, and you get to pay the low cost, and we get to cut out the middleman. Why pay something that why would you pay $3,000 for something that cost $300? That's just one example, but that's a real-world example. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Did you get your radio turned down?
Yeah, that's
okay.
What
good job.
I'm doing right now, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, of course.
I have a skin condition. The doctors don't know what to do with it. Most of them don't know what it is. And it kind of started 4 years ago, and it comes and goes. And I work for a clinic, and one of the doctors called it vascular pustular dermatitis. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
I don't even think I could spell it if my life depended on it. You could probably put a gun to my head. I'm going, okay, can I say a prayer before you? I don't know the answer to that, but can I ask you just a very simple question?
Yes.
Was there a time in your life that you did not have this rash or the skin condition?
Yes. Okay. Oh, absolutely.
All right. How long ago was that?
It started about 4 years ago, and it comes and goes.
Now, the other thing I want to ask is there any chance or possibility within the last 6 years you have been given any prescription drugs or antibiotics?
Prescription drugs, yes. No antibiotics.
Okay, no antibiotics, but you're on a prescription drug of some kind?
Yeah, right now I am.
Do you mind telling me what the name of the drug is? And by the way,
it's anastrozole. I had cancer, and so now I'm on anastrozole, which is a hormone blocker.
Well, what I would do is I would first look up in a PDR, or there's a website called drugs.com.
Okay.
It's pretty easy to navigate as long as you don't mind all the ads they're constantly pumping on the website. But
right.
I would type in that drug, and once you have it up, just click on side effects. And I'm gonna tell you, now I realize I'm complaining as I say this, but it drives me nuts. Because when I read the list of side effects on drugs, this is my first thought. If they list 20 different side effects, and let's just say one of them is skin inflammation, dermatitis, rashes, when you get down to the section where they say, what's the actual occurrence of this? And they'll say, incidence of occurrence is not reported. I'm going, oh, they know it causes rashes, but they're not going to own up to it and tell you what the occurrence is, because it's probably something like 20% of all people that take the drug. But over the last 30 years of doing this, I can't even tell you how many weird skin conditions I have seen completely abolish and go away just by the drug.
But but I'm only been on this medicine 2 years. But
you've had the rash for four.
Yes, sir, and
okay.
It only comes on the bottom of my feet.
The rash is only on the bottom of your feet?
Yes, it's not.
Well, bingo. Well, and you don't know this. Well, maybe you do. But in a system of medicine called acupuncture or Chinese Oriental medicine, the bottom of the feet always represents the liver and the kidneys.
Okay.
And those are called overflow points. And so one suggestion I might have for you is this rash is a byproduct of toxicity that's affecting your body. Now, the other areas that I would probably go to is if you were right in front of me right now, what I would do is I would examine your kidneys and I would examine your liver. And the way that I do this is probably different than anybody else, but I'm looking for, is the organ functioning properly or is it not? And I think that's easy to do. It just takes you having a little bit of faith in my level of expertise. and then from there, then we can start finding out, is this due to a drug toxicity or a reaction, or is it due to a imbalance of gut flora or an allergy, or is there a deficiency? And sometimes I think the liver talks to the body like this, or actually here's the body talking. Liver, I need you to clean up the skin. I'm tired of these rashes on my feet. And the liver says, fine. If you give me what I want, I'll be glad to do it. Well, what do you want? I need energy. Now, you tell me, if you were to rate your energy levels at 10, that's perfect. You feel like $1 million, you can do anything. You've got plenty of energy. Zero is total exhaustion. Where are your energy levels?
Probably about a 6.
Well, that's not bad, but there's room for improvement, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so if a doctor does a blood test on you, and they check everything from liver enzymes and basic blood chemical profiles and kidney function, does that just come back perfect every time?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
the last one times I had a CBC and a BMP done, they were, yeah, they were really good. Well, everything was within limits.
The first thing that I would look at is your CBC, so just look at the white blood cell count. Uh-huh. If your white blood cell count is coming in at 5.6 or below, I would say there's something that's straining or burdening your immune system.
Okay.
Now, your doctor would say, hey, what's the big deal? It's not like it's one or two.
Right.
Well, I don't care about that. I care about you. And if your white blood cell count is a 5.6 or below, I think there's like an 85% chance you either have a chronic low-grade infection or you've got something that's poisoning your body. And I say, let's relieve you of your poison.
Okay.
You know what you could do on your feet? You could just make it easy. Number one, start doing Epsom salt foot soaks every night when you get home from work. Draw that poison
that
out of your...
Good.
Oh, well. Well, what we're going to do is... Good. Now, do you have anybody at the house that loves you?
No.
Do you have a dog?
I have a dog.
If that dog really loved you, they would have the Epsom salt foot bath ready by the time you walked in the door.
I thought so, but I don't think he'll do that.
But you know what? The other day, I was looking at a top secret video feed of what dogs do when their owners leave for work, and I'm telling you, they read books, they get on Netflix, they cook meals.
Do they?
Yes, but they don't want to demonstrate that in front of their owners. They want to have this learned helplessness mentality. But anyway,
yes,
can do that. And the other thing that I would try, and don't laugh at me, well, you can if you want, but there's a substance called Indian healing clay. It's just bentonite clay.
Healing clay, okay.
And it's like $6 for a tub of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you add just enough water to make this delicious slimy mud clay pack, rub that all over your feet and just sit out in the sun for 15 minutes every day. And
okay.
Tell me if it pulls all the poison out of your feet.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
That would be.
Yes, it would be.
Now, I can tell by your accent that you might possibly be French. Is that correct?
No, but you're close. I'm from Germany.
No. I can tell distinctly you have a strong French accent. Now, what I want you to do is say oui, oui, and let me test you.
Okay, oui, oui.
Okay, you're from France. All right. But if you would try those things, let me know if you see a significant improvement. But the other thing that I would do is just take the juice of one lemon, squeeze every last bit of pulp and juice out of it into a glass of water and drink that 3 times a day.
And
we'll see if your fortunes change for the better.
Oh, and I will definitely try that because I listen to you every Saturday and learned a lot over many years. And I just want to give you sort of kind of a testimony. A while back, you talked about toenail fungus and a Vicks VapoRub to put on it. It works.
It did?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes, it does. No, it really does.
Oh, that's great.
That. Yeah,
see,
I mean...
I just made that up. I just thought to myself, who would be foolish enough to spend only a few dollars on Vicks just to get the eucalyptus oil and the camphor and the menthol?
It works.
Great.
I'm telling you, yes.
Well, I'm just...
I appreciate your time, Dr. Morgan.
Well, I'm just real proud of you.
Thank you.
You know, you are very, very smart for a French lady.
Yeah.
I just think this is going to go really well. Let me know what the results are, okay? And see if your feet get better.
Oui, oui, Dr. Morgan.
Bonjour. Au revoir.
Bonjour. Au revoir.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, I think I royally embarrassed the children and the family at the French restaurant when the woman from Quebec asked me if I speak French, and I said, oui, oui. Of course, I didn't understand anything else she said after that. All right. Welcome to the program. How can I help?
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. My wife had a little nodule on her vocal cord 2 years ago, I guess. And ever since then, they said it was malignant. And she went through this radiation stuff.
Now, when you say malignant, does that mean its primary origin it originated from the vocal cords? Or somewhere else and then traveled to the vocal cords?
They didn't tell us that.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, she was having some problems in her throat. So the doctor talked her into taking the radiation, and she went through all of that, and just miserable, of course. And ever since then, when she gets up in the morning, for the first half of the day, if she can even talk at all, it's so coarse that most people, if she gets on the telephone, think she's a man. and she gets irritated with that. Is there anything that, that she can do to clear that up completely?
Do you know what I wish?
A lot of mucus.
Yeah. Do you know what I totally wish? Does she still have a tumor or cancer on the vocal cords?
Well, the ENT doctor says she don't. He said it's clear.
Did you hear me read that article about the $5 cure for cancer that works 100% of the time?
I did not.
Okay, well, that was back at the first part of the program, but what they're doing is they have developed a 100% cure rate for tumors. And their aim is trying to help people that are in third world countries where they have no running water and they have no electricity, so it just requires $5. It's a syringe and a needle, and it's a substance called ethyl cellulose. It's a form of ethanol or alcohol, and they just inject it directly into the tumor. And it has a 100% success rate at dissolving cancers. Now, I can't do that now, but if she's got all this mucus, the purpose of mucus in the body is to trap and bind toxins. And so, I wish I knew more about your wife. Is she just super, super skinny, or is she a big girl?
About average. She weighs about 160.
Okay, is she 4'2", or is she 5'6"?
She's 5'5".
First thing I would do is I would avoid all mucus forming foods for about 3 weeks, and mucus forming foods are going to be anything that's based on dairy or cheese or cream, anything with sugar or heavy refined salt in it, fried foods, orange juice, any type of fruit is going to be a mucus former, except for one thing that she can do to try to dissolve the mucus is lemon water. And so she can literally sip on lemon water all day long. Now, in my fantasy world, which is not really the same fantasy that other men have, but in my fantasy world, your wife would not eat anything at all for the next 3 days. It would just be a complete fast. There's no faster way of clearing waste and debris from the body outside of fasting. No way. I'm not asking you if she wants to do that, but if she tried fasting for 3 days, all we could do is put it to the test and find out, is she better than what she was? And I will believe whatever you tell me. So if you say, just like I told Scott earlier on the phone, you know, the super smart guy?
Yeah.
I told him that if you don't, All you have to think of is, if she doesn't eat anything at all for the next 3 days and all of a sudden she's better, and then she goes back to eating sugar and stuff like that, she's going to have allergies and mucus. Mucus is there to trap and bind waste. And so we can avoid all that just by doing a fast for 3 days to see if she's better.
Very good.
Would she like to do that?
I'm sure she would. She's willing to do most anything, she says.
Well, she can easily start sipping on, do you know what throat coat tea is?
Nope.
They sell it at Walmart and all the health food stores, but it's going to be slippery elm and marshmallow root, and it's very good at helping to soothe all the mucus in the throat and the vocal cords.
What did you say?
It's called throat coat tea, like you're going to coat your throat with this tea.
Yes.
And she can drink that all day long while she's fasting. She can have lemon juice all day long. If she wants to go hog wild and crazy and purge just a little bit more, we might put a pinch of cinnamon and cayenne pepper, but you have to be careful with that stuff. I shouldn't say this, but years ago I had this friend of mine that was always playing tricks on me. And so he went to the restroom and I took a ball of Tabasco sauce at the table and I shook almost half the bottle into a glass of tea, and we waited for about 5 minutes until he took a drink of it. I've never seen anything like that. I think he forgave me. I'm not sure. I haven't talked to him in years, but anyway. I have never seen anything like that. But that would help dissolve all that mucus very, very quickly. It's just kind of brutal to swallow cayenne pepper and Tabasco sauce.
I understand that.
Now, if you think that I'm telling you to put Tabasco sauce in your wife's beverage, that is not what I'm saying today. That ain't it. Wait a second. Do you have a strong marriage?
Yes.
You will not after the Tabasco sauce. It'll be all over. Anyway, if you'll try those things, just have her consider them. But what we have to do is we have to find a way to get her body in good repair. And so I would suggest to you also, maybe her liver and pancreas are probably a little bit weaker than what they should be. So All we can do is simple things, and if she needs more information, we can go from there.
I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome. I wish you the best, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, there is a phone line open. It is 903-586-5257. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Can you hear me? I'm driving.
I can. Is your window rolled up all the way?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sounds like a winner.
I just wanted to add a little two quick comments. The fact that the fasting was dynamite for me. I remember one time I fasted for 40 days, and I saw two miracles when you pray and fast at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost all repercussions from allergies for the first time in my whole life. That was a time of dynamite.
You know what? I totally believe you.
That's great. It was wonderful.
Well, you know, I had three different people tell me this week, by the way, my allergies disappeared after 3 days of no sugar. And I think there may be something to this.
I think I could write a little short book on the benefits of that time.
Yes.
And the other thing I'd like to add real quick is the fact that when you were talking this morning about going beyond what's comfortable and what's required.
Yes, that's George Patton's quote right there.
Yes, sir. I'm going to get that. I'm going to read it. But I want to let you know that I don't know. A lot of people don't run marathons. I've run 5 Equinox marathons. That'll be about a few more days in Alaska, and it'll start up there. But you know what happens when you do that?
What?
You hit the wall. If you hit the wall and you think you can't go anymore, and you keep going, and you remember that and use that experience all
wow.
your life. Wow.
I think I'm going to run a marathon today.
You might be benefited by it.
I would be. I really appreciate your words. So you're telling me the human body has energy in reserve that sometimes you think it's not there, but you keep pushing and it'll come to the surface.
Exactly. And the same thing with fasting. People don't realize this, but 3 days you're not even hungry anymore.
Exactly right. And you'll tell me this is the best that I've felt in the last 5 years, probably.
There is so much benefit to that. I just had to add it.
Do you know what I saw? That guy that that's won all the Iditarod, you know, dog sled. If I don't say it right, I know you know that I don't.
But no,
he says what he does is he doesn't feed his dogs 3 meals a day routinely. He changes everything up. He says one day he'll give them quite a few more calories than what he normally does, and one day he won't even feed them.
Yeah.
But that's brilliant, and that's one of the reasons why. If a person is just eating a very low-calorie-restricted diet, number one, usually they're almost never happy because they're not getting enough nutrients. But your thyroid and all your glands, they just down-regulate to nothingness to where you can't even budge. That's one of the reasons why, and this would probably be a popular comment I'm about to make, sometimes it's important to kind of eat a little bit more than what you normally do, like, say, one day a week, just to kind of shock your thyroid and say, hey, buddy, you better get to work and burn off these extra calories. But the problem in America is everybody's eating that way 7 days a week. They never give their body a rest.
Yes, and you know, Jesus said, when you fast, not if you fast, and
when.
He said, some things only come through prayer and fasting.
You know, this is just what I did this week. I had one, and this is not here. Well, we're not here to talk about me. That's my least favorite topic. But I had one day I did not eat anything after lunch, and I had no breakfast. So you can say I had just about 24 hours of fasting. It was probably a little bit shy of that, you know, like maybe 23 hours, but still. But it's all doable. It's all doable.
Yes, sir, and it benefits you.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
Hey, thanks for your phone call. I hope you have a safe trip wherever you're traveling.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there's a few moments left in the program, but there's plenty of time. 903-586-5257 is the number here at the radio station. You're listening to Health Essentials. Good morning. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Dr. Morgan. Thank you for your program.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling today. I appreciate you.
Definitely. I'm over here in Tyler, Texas. I just had a question about two questions.
when I fast, we're talking about fasting, so I've been doing like 14, 16 hours twice a week, and then I'll do a 24-hour. I've been trying to do a 24-hour at least once a week.
Oh, excellent.
But when I do a 24-hour, I get hot. After about 18 hours, I get really warm, and then I get heart palpitations.
Yeah.
And so I read online that most people get cold when they fast, but I get warm.
Well, why do you think you get warm and you get heart palpitations?
I've read that the body is burning fat or cleaning out.
Well, yeah, I would say all that's correct and true. I agree with you. And believe me, I'm not trying to be overly personal here, but do you have a history of taking any drugs that you shouldn't take?
No, I've been avoiding those. I took briefly Ritalin. Ritalin and...
Well, see, I personally believe that Ritalin will form a crystalline substance within the body, just like speed does. And so when you fast, that's when you're starting to dissolve that crystalline drug, and it starts to work its way out and come out. Mm-hmm. And I realize this idea is not talked about very much, but I've seen people do so many fasts and have powdery substances come up on their skin that just blew my mind. But drugs, by their very nature, they will form a crystalline substance within your fat cells, and so when you fast, you're going to start clearing those. And now, when you say you get warmer, that always makes me think that your liver is really responsible for that. I could be wrong, so. But okay. I would maybe look at the idea that there's room to maybe support your liver just a little bit better with the fast, and I can give you some ideas. It could be just as simple as drinking the juice of 3 lemons and water, you know, each day that you're fasting, to see if that kind of helps that process. Maybe you won't get as hot. But I love the idea of lemon juice because I think it acts as a very good solvent. Just like dishwashing liquid is a solvent for a greasy lasagna that's caked onto the plates. You dissolve it.
Yeah.
And, WD-40 might be a solvent for rusty bolts to help loosen up. Well, that may not be the right term, but you know what I mean. Or if you had like a stain remover, that'd be a solvent to get, you know, in your case, the heavy lasagna spilled all over your white shirt because you thought it was a great idea to wear a white shirt while you're eating lasagna, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or if you had a kid in your arm and they splattered you with lasagna. So lemon juice is a solvent.
Okay.
That means it helps dissolve and break down old drug residue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, and that makes sense. I've heard you talk about the liver before and how waking up and feeling sluggish.
Oh,
and,
yeah, totally. That's a liver. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel that, and so that was, okay.
Well, your liver's doing the best it can to cope with these toxins, let me give you an analogy. Let's say that you decide to start working out real, real hard and you join a gym and you work out for 3 hours with a personal trainer, but for the next 5 days you can't move because you're so sore.
Right.
Well, and all I'm saying is there's a limit to how much metabolic waste your liver can and your kidneys can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you work out and you're so sore that you can't move for 3 days, I'd say that you dumped more waste in your bloodstream than what your liver and kidneys could handle.
Right.
So just consider that. But the lemon juice, that can help you right now.
Okay. And one other thing.
You have about 15 seconds. Sorry about that.
Okay. Hyperglycemia, I'm always hungry. Is that a possible reason? I just get hungry.
I would say that you have a very difficult time getting your fuel to the muscles where it belongs, so the lemon juice may help solve that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for your phone call.
All right. God bless.
God bless you.